The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
So it does feel tranquil in here, even more tranquil 2 minutes ago. At the end of the sitting, it was very peaceful and quiet here. And one of the things to appreciate in meditation practice and in life in general is tranquility. To learn to recognize it, to value it, to support it, maybe even to cultivate it at times. The meditation practice itself tends to bring a degree of tranquility with it as it's done. Sometimes meditation practice will reveal how we're not tranquil. Often enough, I think, when I sit down to meditate, I'm a little bit surprised. I should be less surprised, since I should know by now, that my mind is actually more active than I realized. You know, I was going about my life doing my things, and then I sit down and say, oh, look how it's still kind of, mind is racing along, a lot of thoughts. I don't know if I want to call it restlessness or agitation exactly, but you could call it that, just because of the energy and the activity there. And then as I continue to sit, over time that level of activity, energized thinking, quiets down, and I feel much more tranquil, I feel calmer. And the degree to which I'm calm or tranquil, it varies from day to day, or sitting to sitting, or all kinds of ways. And sometimes the feeling of tranquility is strong enough that it can be considered a state of tranquility. It seems to be kind of a really clear, strong, sometimes it's the strongest feeling present as we're sitting. Sometimes it can be very strongly felt physically, and there's a bodily tranquility. And sometimes there's strong mental tranquility. And they have a different feeling. They're felt differently. The bodily tranquility is often characterized by many people as a kind of refreshing coolness that kind of spreads a little bit through the body. Refreshing coolness that kind of has a feeling of almost like fullness, a kind of expansiveness. Not if you really look that it covers the whole body. But if you don't look too closely, it feels like it's, you know, that includes the whole body. It's like everything just has this refreshing tranquility, coolness, subtleness, feeling of everything is right. Certain kind of contentment tends to come with it. And when it's a state of that, I really feel like you're settling into that state, that that tranquility also feels very healing. It feels very, more than just fresh, it just feels like, if you could just imbibe this, it feels like it'd be like medicine that you took in. It is kind of medicine. For me, there's a number of things that I associate with meditative tranquility. Sometimes I have a strong hit of it when I go for a walk in the hills around here. And I go through, there are certain trails I go through that are go through a kind of a lightly forested but kind of full canopied area of the hills. And there's something about the long trail and the spread out trees and the full canopy and the sunlight that just feels very tranquil and peaceful. And when I go through there, it's almost like my pores are kind of feeling or taking in the atmosphere, the tranquility of the place. And not a few times I've gone through these kinds of forested areas, and I just feel that my body kind of relaxes and releases some of its holding. And it's almost like the nourishment, even though it kind of feels like it comes from the atmosphere, it almost feels like the nourishment's coming from the inside out. Maybe it's something inside of me that's responding to what's around me. And so something begins to release and open up or expand outward. I have a very strong association of tranquility to water. And I spend a lot of time in my life on water or near water. And I just I love being a passenger going across the San Mateo Bridge if there's no waves or wind. Because I'm a passenger, I can just look at certain places you can look out across the water, and it's just big expanse of flat water, still water. And to me, it's just because of my background of spending time on water, that it's just so nourishing, so peaceful for me to look out in that area, and I just love to kind of look out at that. So the idea that of calm, tranquil waters, the waters are tranquil, still waters, to me is very inspiring because of the strong associations I have to times in my life where I've sat at the edge of water, edge of little bays of water, and early in the morning, like at dawn, and the water's completely still, the air is still, and everything's kind of quiet and peaceful and safe, and looking across the span of water, tremendous tranquility and peacefulness. And then everything feels right in the world for me in those normal moments. And that feeling, having that feeling, I had that growing up as a kid in different points in my life, and I had a lot of movement and chaos in my life, but touchstones were these places in the water where you're just like, wow, this is good. And so now when I drive across the San Mateo Bridge, I get a little hit of that. It reminds me. Maybe a strange place to feel it, but... And then another association I have with tranquility that is a little bit of a lesson is, said I spend a lot of time near water, on water, in water, underwater growing up. People called me a dolphin because I spent so much time swimming in the water. We lived near the water on the edge of the sea. And I remember, I was probably 11 or 12 years old. One of the things I loved to do was to dive under the water. I don't know how deep I went, maybe 6 feet, 7 feet, 6 feet down maybe. And I would go down to the bottom of the water, and I'd flip over, and for I don't know how long it was, 45 seconds, I would just kind of lay there kind of on the bottom of the sea, looking up. And I loved doing it because sometimes it was quite choppy and wavy on top. And so it was agitated on top. It was not tranquil on top, but it was so peaceful 6 feet down under. And to kind of look up and just see from this really what felt like safe, tranquil, peaceful place, looking up and see the agitation of the surface, the waves kind of doing their thing. I just delighted in it. And so the lesson of that is that it's possible to feel some depth of tranquility and peacefulness, of calmness within, in the midst of an agitated world. You don't have to be in a calm place to be calm yourself. But it helps to have some kind of inner depth. You're really connected to your body, and through your body you really feel and connected to some inner sense or feeling or state even of calm and peacefulness. That is a refuge, a resource, a support for our life as we go through it. And I certainly notice that when I have this kind of stronger sense of calm in different difficult situations that I'm in, that I tend to be wiser. I tend to have access to better thinking about the situation than I do if I'm not calm. I tend to have access to better motivations and intentions in the situation and what's needed there. And I tend not to get tense by the challenges of the thing. If I'm not centered in some kind of calm place, then it's a lot easier to get caught in it and feel tense and all these things. So to become familiar with an embodied bodily sense of a calm is really a great gift. And one of the gifts of meditation for me has been the degree to which I'm now familiar with states of tranquility and calm. I like the word tranquil. Some people maybe don't like it. It's a little bit awkward to use it because the verb, tranquilizing, doesn't sound so good. And because of the associations we have in English now with, you know. I think they shoot animals to tranquilize them, right? They have these like you know, they want to catch a wild animal and not kill it, but just kind of maybe treat it with medicine or something. They tranquilize it first, right? It means you take a gun and you shoot it. So we don't want that association with meditation. So sometimes I like the word calm then, because the verb calming seems less, more doesn't have these violent associations. And but calming, so there's different words. Peace, serenity is often used. And I've sometimes seen people translate the word, the Pali word for tranquility, as repose. I don't know how well that works. People don't use that word very much. But I offer you these different words because different people have different association with words. And rather than getting stuck on the word I'm using, tranquility, you might want to translate it into a word that works better for you. The general idea is good enough. It's interesting that the Buddha talked about tranquility, the cultivation of tranquility. We talked about the nourishment or the food for tranquility. So what is it that feeds it and helps it to grow? And he said tranquility is the nourishment for tranquility. And thanks a lot. So, you know, but if you can start identifying even small hints of calmness that you might have, that then supports the growth of more tranquility, more calm. And so to be able to start recognizing what it feels like in an embodied physical way to be calm, what it's like in a mental way to be calm, there might be, even in difficult situations where you feel agitated, there might be some places in your body, some places in your mind, some corners where you have access to some calm, some peacefulness. Some people use the calmness of their feet touching the floor. And that feels calm. Everything else is much more agitated. And having that as a reference point then reminds the system of it, or kind of lets some degree of calm develop to grow and develop and become stronger. So if tranquility is the food for tranquility, then it helps to recognize, what's required is to recognize the tranquility. It's the recognition of tranquility that allows tranquility to be the food for tranquility. So to look around, recognize it, appreciate it, value it. Now, some people find that tranquility is a number of problems with tranquility. One is kind of philosophically. There are people who believe that meditation shouldn't be about tranquility, that it should be something else. And some schools of meditation actually emphasize more being really vigorous in your meditation, lots of energy, and really pour yourself into it. And, you know, when I was in Japan, in the meditation hall, they would yell sometimes, all kinds of things, you know, like, concentrate! You know, like, you know, and some people who want to help you get concentrated will say, calm down, relax. But there was like, you know. And there's value to the kind of that kind of vigorous, engaged way. But sometimes that approach can then poo-poo or kind of see less value in tranquility. Sometimes people get attached to calm and tranquility, and they think that's the purpose of meditation, and so they get stuck there. And they just think, I have to be calm all the time. And you don't have to be calm all the time. In fact, to be calm all the time probably is a truncated life, because there's time for other ways of being. But to have access to it and to value it and to know when to cultivate and develop it is an important part of a wise life. Some people are kind of a little bit down on tranquility because every time they get calm, they fall asleep. And so, you know, they feel even hesitant to become calm. Some people get dull as they get tranquil and calm, and so the dullness doesn't feel good. So this is where the art of meditation comes into play, because there has to be good energy to become calm. A real state of tranquility is a kind of an invigorating state or an energized state. But how it's energizing, I don't know if what I'm about to say makes sense to you, but give me a chance. I think of it as of invisible energy. So what I mean by that is that It's neither energetic enough to feel, and is not soporific. It's not like lack of energy that you can feel there's not enough energy. There's just the right amount of energy that it neither feels like too much or too little, and so it's kind of invisible. And the example I have for that, I don't know if it works for you, the example I have for that is waking up in the afternoon from a refreshing nap. One of the great joys of getting old for me is I kind of like to take a nap most days in the afternoon. And so I usually take a 10-15 minute nap. And when I wake up, the problem with these naps is not the naps. The problems with the naps is that when I wake up, I'm so contented, I don't want to get up. And so I'll just lay there and look at the ceiling for longer than I was napping. Because why should I get up and do anything? I feel so peaceful and happy and contented. But I feel refreshed in my body. And this feeling of being invisibly energized and refreshed, I feel clear. I clearly don't feel tired. I don't feel dull. I'm clear. I'm very clear feeling, but I don't feel energized either. So that's why I call it invisible energy. So this kind of, maybe it's the midpoint, the middle way of energy. And so there has to be enough energy. And so it's important in meditation, the art of it, is to learn how to keep oneself appropriately energized and not let oneself get too dull or falling asleep. One sign of a meditation getting too kind of dull or kind of too calm is starting to have dreamlike images. If you start having dreamlike images, dreamlike states, then you're dipping too far. The other is that you start having, you feel pretty calm and pretty good and nice, and you start drifting off in a lot of pleasant thoughts. That's usually a sign that you're letting yourself get, you know, a little bit lacking a certain amount of energized, paying attention, alertness to what's going on. And so part of the art of meditation is tracking yourself to feel when you start going into the kind of downsides of too much calm. And then turn up the volume of the energy or figure out some way to bring a little more brightness to the mind or the body so that you're not falling asleep. So that you have the, find that, try to look for that balance. In the teachings of the Buddha, he talks a little about a sequence of states that can arise in meditation, and certain kind of energetic joy in practice is the precursor for physical tranquility. And so as you feel this joy, it kind of sets the stage or kind of keeps provides the energy. And then as we relax, the energetic sides, or the extra energetic sides of the joy, there's this wonderful feeling of tranquility, contentment come into play. And then in the sequence of ways the Buddha talks about tranquility, where it fits in the sequence, that sometimes that tranquility is the precursor for a certain kind of deep happiness, sublime happiness or pleasure, physical pleasure. It feels almost in the body. And sometimes that happiness is the precursor for becoming concentrated. And sometimes, in some lists the Buddha gives, it goes directly from tranquility to concentration. And so it's very interesting that this goal that many people have of getting concentrated comes when in the wake of being tranquil and the wake of being a certain kind of meditative happiness. And to jump over that step of developing the tranquility sometimes doesn't work in terms of developing concentration. And so when there's an adequate tranquility, a peaceful state, where we feel content and we're happy, we're not feeling anxious, we're not feeling caught up in desires and expectations and wanting things, but there's a deep feeling of tranquil contentment. We feel at home here in this body and mind. Then that contentment can spill over into a kind of happiness and well-being. And then it becomes a lot easier to develop concentration because you don't have to work so hard at it. because we don't have so much resistance to it or so many distractions from it. And so it's more, concentration becomes more of a settling in, a quieting down into this wonderful space than it is huffing and puffing and trying to kind of fixate the mind on something and really force oneself into a state of concentration. So the importance of tranquility, and so partly because of my earlier training was in Zen, where it was really a practice of just to sit there without any gaining idea, without trying to do anything except sit there and be fully present. There was a lot of things I thought I didn't have permission to do. And then when I started doing Vipassana practice in Asia, that's where I was introduced to it, there was very kind of strict, all you're supposed to do is to note, to be aware of what's happening. And there was no mention about relaxing. And it was just, again, you're allowed to do a little bit more than just be present. You're allowed also to not to know. But nothing more, was the impression I got. But eventually I learned that there's nothing wrong with relaxing the body and calming oneself. And in fact, that's what the Buddha encouraged. In the practice of Anapanasati, the 16 steps of breath meditation the Buddha gave, there's a couple of them have to do with relaxing. Many translations have tranquilizing, calming. So the first thing that the Buddha explains is to calm the bodily formations. The bodily formations are those sensations in your body that can be calmed. What can be calmed? The tensions we have, the holding patterns of the muscles. And where do those holding patterns come from? They come from the mind, the tensions of the mind. And so there's a wonderful reciprocal relationship with relaxing the body, and that supports relaxing the mind. The Buddha also talked about relaxing the mental formations. What are the mental formations, activities that can be relaxed or calmed? It's the ones that are agitated or the ones that are tense. Hard. And so to relax those, to soften those mental formations. As those mental activities quiet down, then the body quiets down. As the body quiets down, it affects the mind. There's a wonderful reciprocal relationship to it. So sometimes in the art of meditation is to learn to recognize as what can I in some easy way soften, relax, calm this body. You don't want to try too hard. But if it's easy to do it, why not? And then soften, and if you can't relax something, a great art is to soften around it. Relax around it. It counts. And sometimes the attitude we have to it, the relationship we have to it, we're in an adversarial relationship, we're tense around it, we're trying too hard to do something. And to soften around it also then softens this attitude, softens the how we look at it, what we're trying to do. So just soften around it. Same thing can be helpful with pain. If the pain somehow is becoming problematic and you can't figure out how to practice with the pain itself, try practicing around the pain. Soften around it, open up around it. So sometimes we want to soften the body. Other times, what's helpful is to soften the mind. And there's one way to do that is to relax what I call the thinking muscle. And this is does go back into the body, but as you feel in the body, if there's any tension, pressure, hardness, agitation in the body, and that's associated with the thinking we're doing. So for me, it's often kind of behind the forehead that I feel that. Sometimes it can be in the jaws, sometimes it's in the shoulders, sometimes it's in the mouth, sometimes it's in the chest. Different places you can feel whatever the different concerns are of the day. But find where the physical corollary of tension or energy is that's related to that thinking, and then relax that, soften it. As the thinking muscle softens, then the thinking tends to quiet down as well. People who let go of their thoughts and haven't relaxed the thinking muscle, it's kind of like you're kind of like squeezing the toothpaste, what is it called? Toothpaste tube, the tube, and looking at it, trying to say, stop coming out. You know, it's coming out and coming out and coming out, and but you have to stop squeezing, otherwise, you know, you can take it off, you can brush it off, right? Get rid of it, and then it keeps coming out. You have to stop squeezing. And so, same thing with the mind, you know, our mind is kind of like a toothpaste tube. You know, if you keep squeezing it, it keeps pouring out. So you have to kind of relax and soften the mind. I hope I didn't offend anybody. Tranquility. Tranquility of the body, tranquility of the mind, calmness of the body, calmness of the mind. Don't get attached to it. Don't overdo it. But it's one of the great tools. It's one of the great gifts, one of the great nourishing aspects that can come from meditation practice. That's a great support. And chances are that if you can cultivate some degree of greater degrees of tranquility that you rest in, that it'll give you a very different perspective about the life you're living. And so you'll make wiser choices from that. One of the perspectives that is very fascinating, that sometimes involves debates and all the lawyers of the mind, and that is, once you have a state of peacefulness and tranquility, is the question is, why give it up? What's worth giving it up for? And chances are, some percentage of the reasons why you give up calm or tranquility are not worth it. But you've never questioned it. You never thought about it. People unquestioningly will just kind of get pulled into the drama, the concerns, the thoughts that they have. But if you have a clear reference point of calm or tranquility, where you can kind of see you're losing it, you're kind of getting agitated, and if you take the time to question, is this really what I want to do? Is this the right thing to do? Is this really the wise thing to do? Do I have to do this? And that's when the lawyers will come in. And some lawyers, or the debate team, will take the side that, of course you should get agitated. It's very important. And then hopefully there's a good, other side of the debate team that will say, well, actually, you don't have to. There's no need for that. And you can go back and forth until you see who wins. And but, you know, some of the ways we've gotten agitated, it's had its turn. You know, we've done it, you know, so many times that it's about time to give something else a chance. The amount of times that we've kind of gotten agitated because we feel like somehow we're a bad person, we're wrong, we're embarrassed, we feel inadequate or something like that, and we feel kind of all agitated about ourselves. It hasn't been a good strategy. And there's not much point to kind of get pulled into that agitation. And to be able to see that choice is a phenomenal thing, to see the mind going off into some kind of activity that it's some neurosis or something it's been doing, and say, wait a minute. Should I go into it and then spend another few thousand dollars in therapy? Or should I just kind of not go into it, stay calm? So it's not, you know, I'm saying it as if it's easy. It's not so easy to do this, but it's fantastic. Once it can start happening, when you feel like you have this reference point of peace, of calm, tranquility, and you see, it's a phenomenal thing to discover at some point when and where you have some choice about leaving it or not. And then to see how you exercise that choice. And what wisdom do you have? And how do you question it? And how do you really look at this to decide what's best for you? And sometimes you'll find that what's best for you is not to leave that calm. stay there. There's no need to leave. You'll be wiser if you do that. So maybe some of you are a little bit calmer than you were at the beginning of the day, more settled. If your mind is not, maybe your body is. Sometimes the body gets settled in different ways than the mind does. And the body feels more settled, more stable, more calm. So I hope you're a little bit more tranquil. And I hope that you'll use this tranquility that you have, the calm you have, to question how you might start losing it when you walk out the door. Or as soon as you stand up. And maybe you don't have to. Maybe the things you have to do, you can do in a calm way or tranquil way or easy way. So that's what I had for today.